From the ball fields of childhood to serving across Army posts and Navy stations, Kat's stories is one of resilience, determination, and trailblazing in spaces where women weren't always welcome. Turned down for a civilian job simply because she was a woman, Kat chose a different path and built a nearly two-decade military career that carried her across the globe. This is a story you don't want to miss. We made it! Season 6 of Dog Tag Diaries, where every military woman deserves a platform to tell her story and have it be heard. I'm your host, Captain Kim, and this community has already racked up over 4,500 downloads. So let's smash 5K together. Share these episodes and help us make Season 6 our biggest yet. In this episode of Dog Tag Diaries, we sit down with Pat, a proud veteran of both the United States Army serving 1975 to 1978 and the United States Navy serving 1981 to 1993. As the oldest of five, Pat grew up outdoors, hunting, fishing, and playing sports alongside her dad. That adventurous spirit followed her into the military, where she embraced both the challenges and the rewards of service. Pat, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
No problem.
This is your first podcast ever.
Yes.
So can I ask, well, let's talk about how we met first.
Okay.
We met at the Women Veterans Conference that was hosted in Bend, Oregon this year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what made you decide to come to the conference?
Well, 2 years ago, they had one, and it was a slew of information. And I could contribute and I gained things. So I thought, well, maybe this time would be the same. But unfortunately, I don't think it was as good as it was 2 years ago. There wasn't enough information. Like there were PAC people there last time and all these other people that actually had information that I tried to use. But, you know, and some of the I passed on to other people. So I was a little disappointed in this one. So hopefully the next one in 2 years will be even better.
Oh, so like resources for your disability?
Well, resources, but not just for mine, but for others too, because there's a lot of people out there that haven't got a clue. I mean, when the 2 years ago, the PAC people, I mentioned things like Fort McClellan, Alabama.
Talk about the PAC, though, for listeners who don't know what that is.
Well, it should help with whatever disabilities you have. For me, I'm covered, so I'm not worried about it for myself. But I was trying to get information for others that I know that are having trouble and stuff like that, and plus pass on information.
And you don't feel like this year was enough of that?
No, there was no PAC people there. And I had a bunch of copies of stuff that I had printed up and took with me. And I will connect with, well, I have to go to Portland in this month for a doctor's appointment. So there's a lady's name they gave me that I'll connect with her and give it to her. And yeah, see if she can take it forward.
Well, just so the listeners know, the PACT Act is a law that expands the VA health care and benefits for the veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxic substances like Agent Orange. And so that's interesting. And so since I was part of the planning committee this year, we will take that feedback.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't know that.
And loop it in for the next 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was interesting because I remember you and I meeting and we talked about Dog Tag Diaries, the podcast. This is your first time doing a podcast. Is it your first time ever telling your story?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you get out in the civilian world, you tell little tidbits here and there and the funny things that happen or the good things that happen and you know, you just go with it like that and then, you know, keep them laughing. That's my motto.
All right. Well, let's dig into you. Let's hear about where you grew up and how you grew up and how that influenced you and then how you found the military.
Well, my dad was in construction. So we moved about every 2 years to some different place here and there.
Oh, where were you born?
Glendale, California.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in California, mainly in California, but we moved at one point when I was in high school or started just starting high school, we moved to Kansas, which was a real, oh my God. I'll tell you what, it was just so, it was like, oh my God. But they had women's softball, so I could get into that. They had wheat fields that were just enormous.
Well, wait, let's talk about Pat, because you were born what year?
47.
So that's huge, having a woman's
softball team. Yeah, that was huge for me. That was the 60s, early 60s.
Yeah, okay.
So it was huge, yeah. I mean, and boy, I got right into that little story. I did that big time. I liked that one. That was a good one. But in Kansas, it was different. I mean, from California to Kansas in the 60s.
Oh, come on. Yes.
Or it was actually, it was early 60s, 61.
Okay.
59, 60, 61 type thing. But what got me was seeing it. The sunflowers that moved with the sun. The wheat fields that looked like ocean when the wind hit it. Looked like ocean waves. I love going out. And my dad and I would go, well, he was from North Dakota. So he, like, you know, and when I say we went hunting, we went bird hunting. Doves and quail and pheasant. But at some point there, when my younger brother, the next one came along, I was 9 years old by the next one that came along to me. And by that time, he had established himself, my dad. So we didn't really need to that food. We were using that for food. I mean, it was obvious that we needed that.
So you learned to shoot a weapon at a young age.
Yes. Yes, I was very good at it.
How young were you? Do you remember the first time you shot?
I was 12. He bought me my first shotgun when I was 12.
What? Okay.
Yeah. But after, once he got established, I couldn't kill anymore. And he saw that. He saw me missing intentionally. So what we did was we'd go to turkey shoots and shoot. I didn't mind killing clay pigeons.
What switched with you that you no longer wanted to kill live?
Because we didn't need it.
Oh, okay. Understood.
We didn't need to eat it. Then that's what we were doing. We were eating everything we killed, fishing, hunting, whatever. My dad's first rule was if you shoot it, you're going to eat it.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the rule of the house.
So you learned to live off the land and your animals and resources at a young age.
Yes.
Ooh. Okay. And then your brother comes along.
Yeah. Then my brother comes along and that kind of put the kibosh on just about everything. Well, not really, but he was a baby and I liked kids, so that was okay. I'm glad I like kids, actually.
Okay. And then you ended up staying in Kansas?
Just for a couple of years, my freshman year in high school, and then we moved again. We moved back to California, actually, after that, in Kansas.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And he got into different things, and the others all came along, and, you know, it was one of those things.
Okay. So were your mom and dad ever in the military?
No. My dad was, World War II.
Oh, your dad. Okay.
He was an engineer in World War II.
In the Army?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that how you kind of knew about the military?
Basically, yeah. He never talked about it, but every once in a while he would drop something. And it would just, I was so sorry at that age that I didn't question what he was talking about, but I never asked him. And he just, every once in a while, like I said, he would drop something on me. It's like, oh my God, really?
Oh gosh.
You know, yeah, that was tough on him. They were all, those guys from World War II, you talk about PTSD. Holy crap. They were full of it. Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even have the resources. They weren't treated like we were treated, like as heroes today.
No.
Oh, that's so unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I'm sure that it led to his high blood pressure. He died at 43, 44 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
He had a massive heart attack after my youngest brother was born.
Pat, that had to be so tough for you because it sounds like you were a daddy's girl.
Yeah, well, I was. Yeah. I was 16 when he died and it hit me hard. But by the same token, my mom was in a dire straits and the young kids are all younger. So we had to pull myself together real fast there.
And you were the oldest, correct? So then you had to help take care of all the younger siblings. Wow. What a great responsibility at such a young age.
Well, that's why when I got the military, it was easy. You know, I could tell those kids what to do with themselves.
Well, yeah. Okay. So how did you find your way into, because you started your career in the Army. How did you find your way into the Army?
Well, it was that billboard. It was that MP billboard that I saw.
Okay, talk about that. Was that when, that was the era when it was be all that you can be?
Yeah, type thing, yeah. And you know, quite frankly, I don't remember boot camp, Army boot camp at all, other than just a couple of nasty things that happened. But
where did you go? Because that was 1975.
Yeah, well, I was in Santa Rosa. I was working in San Francisco.
Okay.
And living in Santa Rosa, California, which was right up the road, 50 miles or so. And they had a bus system that was great. So I just took it to and from work every day. And that bus, I usually would wake up right just before my stop. But one night I woke up really kind of early and I saw that billboard. And I had just been told I couldn't be an underwriter. So I was like, screw you guys, watch me. And basically that's what I did. I went down Saturday, and enlisted.
Oh my, see, tell Pat no, and she's going to go find a way to do it. Okay, so you enlisted, and where was your basic training?
Fort McClellan, Alabama.
Alabama.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went from California to Kansas, back to California, now you're in Alabama.
Oh yeah, what an eye-opener that was, too.
Yeah, talk about that. It's quite the culture shock going into basic training.
Yeah, it was. And not only that, but the MP school, let me tell you something, the MP school moved to Alabama while I was in boot camp, okay?
Military police, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that was going to be my job, was to be an MP. So, I mean, that was why I went in.
Oh, okay.
And when I got to school, there was a whole, I mean, it was just men and women. They put us in some nasty-ass barracks that just had not been ready for us at all. I mean, they were just World War II stuff, you know. And they put a plasterboard between the men's and the women's latrines. So we had all kinds of stuff in that latrine.
Oh, my God. Okay, keep painting the picture because this is interesting.
And a lot of girls had no clue as to what urinals were.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Plus, the cockroaches were about as big as a mouse.
Oh, yeah.
One night we heard somebody screaming horribly, and we ran into the bathroom to see what was going on. And some kid she turned the light on, there was cockroaches everywhere, and she was screaming. So one of the girls that came in behind me, she says, oh, don't worry, they'll go back out when the lights go off again. they walk out by themselves.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was weird because you had not just the women, but there were men, women, and all kinds. We had...
In the same barracks?
No. Yeah, pretty much. But you know, each of us had our own sleeping areas.
Yeah,
the guys
had
their sleeping area, and we had ours. And the same with the women. But putting this together like that was an eye-opener because we did things that you don't do that. I mean, you just, there wasn't anything bad going on. But the fact that they were men that came from a men's group and we were women that came from a women's group, and to mingle them was interesting. But the first day there, let me tell you something. The first day there, the first sergeant came out and gathered all the girls together, all the women.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said to us, we don't want you in our MP Corps. So ladies, I'm going to make this as hard as I can on you. And bless their hearts, the women showed up. They all showed up. There were 7 out of the 10 top were women.
What?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, wait, did you all like talk about it or were you
of
just like?
Of course we did. Of course we did.
And you were like.
Over cigars. Somebody brought a bag of cigars, a bunch of cigars, and we sat in the little table one night smoking cigars, being sick as hell. But it was worth it. It was just a good chat system, you know?
Yes. How long was basic training back then? In 8 weeks. Okay.
MP school was 8 weeks also.
So did he make good on his promise and make it as tough on the women as
possible? Oh, he did. Really? Every time, every shit job that came down the pike, we got women only. Yep.
Do you remember some of the jobs that he would put you on?
Well, we have to go clean offices and latrines and other buildings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, hey, it's okay. We did it.
And then you ended up graduating. Where did you go to AIT then or your job?
Right there was AIT. That was AIT. It was MP school.
Oh, you did your basic and your AIT there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So 8 weeks of basic, and then how long did they keep you?
In military police school? Eight weeks.
8 weeks as well. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then did you get shipped off anywhere?
Yes. Well, a female captain, I think I told you about this one, but she came and interviewed a bunch of MPs because they had a missile site up in North Dakota. All MPs. That's all that was there.
You did not tell me this story, but this is good because everyone gets to hear it for the first time, including me. Go ahead. This is so
exciting.
Okay,
so when my first clue we were going to be in trouble was when she said, I've got some older guys up there in North Dakota that if I don't take you up, they're going to be really pissed. So I'm thinking, okay, here's my first challenge because I know what's coming. Yeah. And sure enough, it did. It tried. But she got fired about 8-9 weeks into my duty there for dancing.
What was the challenge?
The older guys needed an older woman.
Oh.
I was 25 years old by this time. Yeah, think about it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what she was doing. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. No.
Why? Why does that surprise you?
It doesn't. I know it happens, but just hearing it from you. And then, they found out and she ended up getting fired?
Well, they didn't find out about that. They got fired because she danced naked on one of the old tables at the O Club one night and she got drunk. She was a drinker.
Pat, these stories. Okay.
Sorry.
No, I think this is good. This is what they want to hear. Okay. So you end up going to
North Dakota.
North Dakota. That's where your dad was.
Yeah, he was born in South Dakota.
Actually. South Dakota. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you're in North Dakota with these men.
Yes. It worked out okay. We had a lot of, I could handle it. I wasn't worried about it. Okay.
Yeah.
I could handle anything that came down the pike, quite frankly. And except one night, you know, they always pulled games on you. They always say, you know, go do this, go do that. And you didn't really have to go find something. And it wasn't even, you know, anything that was important. But one night the phone rang and I was the only person on the panel. And I picked up the phone and I answered it. And he said, this is Major Minor. And at that point, I'd had enough of the games. And I lost it that night. I was laughing my ass off. And I'm hollering because my sergeant wasn't there at the moment. And I was hollering for my sergeant to come. And I said, saying he's Major Minor, some jackass is saying he's in. My sergeant's going, no, 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 there is one, there is one. He was a Major Minor. His last name was Minor, and he was a major.
But you thought it was a joke.
It was a joke. Well, I'll tell you, the guy, the next morning, I got called into the captain's office, obviously.
Yeah.
And he was there, and he just said, I just had to meet this person that thought my name was so damn funny. I said, okay, well, it's me. Sorry, sir.
Oh, he didn't have you go in front-leaning rest position or anything as
no,
a punishment?
No,
oh, okay.
No. He got a kick out of it. I guess he hadn't.
What did he want you for?
Well, he was calling to find, you know, he was going to run a test on us, and he wanted to tell the sergeant he was going to run a test.
Oh, my God!
And the sergeant was out of the room at the moment, and I picked up the phone. You know, what can you say?
Yeah. Okay, so you were brought up to North Dakota, and to be an MP, a military police?
Yes, and if you go in, you can still find it's a pyramid up there. It was a radar station and a missile base. If you go into, look up Mickelson Safeguard, and you'll see the pyramid still there.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a big, big radar thing. The round things that you see on the pyramid are as radar.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, then that base closed down about 2-3 months after I got there. Actually, it was really weird because here again, I thought I learned about some place that I hadn't been.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a whiteout that happened. I mean, I woke up one morning, I heard this whistling noise. And I looked out, and it looked like my window was all fogged up. And I looked, they had a radar or a TV station that showed the weather, just the weather. And the wind was all the way to as far as it could go, the wind indicator. And the cold was as far low as it could go. And when I went out of the barracks, they had it blocked off. They had the doors blocked off. And I asked the guys, what's going on? He says, well, we're in the middle of a whiteout. And I go, okay. So he said, and he grabbed my britches. He grabbed me by the belt. And he said, now step outside and put your hand up to your face and bring it as close as you can till you see it in this whiteout. I touched my nose before I saw it. It was that dark. I mean, it was just amazing. It was amazing, that whiteout. I've never seen it. And it lasted for 3 days. So we couldn't get out of the building for 3 days. And all the guys that were out at the sites had, all they had was sea rats out there. We're in the barracks. We still had the kitchen, so we could all cook, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But whiteouts are amazing. They're just amazing things.
3 days it lasted?
Yeah, yeah. And see, when I got up there, when I got to North Dakota, I saw in the parking lots, it looked like, remember the old drive-in movies? That
I
had?
Love the drive-in movies.
Okay, but you had those speakers there?
Yes.
You had poles with speakers on. Well, when I drove up, I thought that's what it was. Oh, they showed movies here at night. No, they're plugs. Because you plug your car in. You would have blankets for your engine and blankets for your some kind of dipstick thing. Because when it gets up there, when it gets that cold, it freezes. Everything freezes.
How cold was it? Do you remember?
It was
what, and what
below
month?
Zero. It was in probably October, November time frame. And there was ropes, and I didn't understand what the ropes were for, but there was ropes between the buildings. All the buildings had ropes between them. That was to guide you. If you got stuck in one of those, that was to guide you back to wherever you were trying to get to. Just hang on to those ropes and walk, God. You know? Yeah, it was really something. It was amazing. It was amazing. I loved it. It was different.
Well, it was amazing. And then the base closes. And then where did you go?
I went to Fort Devens, Massachusetts.
Oh, I know Fort Devens. Yeah, yeah.
In my stupidity there, I thought, okay, 1976 is coming. They're going to have a big celebration in Philadelphia, and I'm going to have some leave time.
Yes.
Well, I was an MP. Of course, I worked it. I didn't get... but that's okay. I had a good time.
So you ended up finishing your career in the Army.
Yeah.
At Devens.
Fort Devens, uh-huh.
Yes, now it's Devens.
They closed it all up.
Yeah.
But that was interesting, too. I mean, it was an interesting place. I saw Boston. I was a traveler, so I
You were in Worcester.
Yeah,
Worcester. Worcester.
When I got up there, I go, what the hell is Worcester? Worcester.
Yes. And all the Bostonians are like, don't ever say that again. It's Worcester. You're like, okay,
sorry about that.
Sorry, yeah. You Patriot and Red Sox fans. Okay.
Yeah. Also, it was the Green Berets. The 82nd Airborne was there when I was there. And they had a huge range where they would jump. They would jump out of perfectly good airplanes. I don't understand that, but they did.
Yeah.
Never could understand that one. But in that range, yeah, this was the first time that I really got it in Fort Devens. I mean, the range, when I became a MP there, and being a female, they sent me to investigator school back to Alabama again. So I was an MP investigator. And as that, I had to be in charge of anything that happened to women, of course, and anything with juveniles. Okay. So that was fine. I was okay. But as an investigator, one of the first times they sent me up out to the range, okay, they put me in this helicopter, this old Huey helicopter with no doors, and you're sitting sideways, okay, looking out to where the door was. And every one of them came around and checked the straps that I was strapped in, okay, and I should have thought that was what was going to go happen. You know, I'm thinking, oh, shit, why are they all checking every one of them checked it. Then we took off, and we got up. And we got over, and all of a sudden, he flipped it so that I was hanging like this over the range. Yeah, when he pulled it back up, I go, yes, do it again. Blew him right out of the water. Their one was over.
Were they doing it to initially scare you?
Yes.
Oh, you cannot scare Pat. Oh, my gosh. They should know this already.
Pat, I had a good time with that one.
You did. Okay, I'm really interested. Let's talk about your time as an investigator, an MP investigator, because you were put on, you were given the women's, what was happening with the women?
Anything that happened with the women.
And what was happening during that era?
Some kid was raping some of the women. So I gave classes on what self-defense type thing, what they could do. With, you know, with their keys and their pens and that kind of stuff. And it, you know, darkness, don't go bow below and all that crime, all that kind of stuff. And with the juveniles, I had the judge give me probation. I was a probation officer for the juveniles. And I had a lot of fun with them. I had five little kids. I had five little five-year-olds that went out one day for whatever reason, and they did like $10,000 worth of damage in windows, breaking windows in buildings, throwing rocks. Well, the Army at that time had horses. They had a stable there. And I asked the kid at the stable, I said, can you use any help? And he goes, well, sure, I can always use help. I said, I got five-year-olds. He says, that's okay. I can take the horses out. They were out there shoveling shit for 3 days.
Oh, that wouldn't be well with the child labor laws these days. But
well, they had little buckets and little hand shovels. It wasn't too bad.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So you saw a lot of sexual harassment or assault with women back then?
Yeah. And that was my biggest thing was if I had walked in, because I was also the first line of defense for abuse and neglect.
Oh, my gosh. You had a lot of titles.
A lot of stuff. I had a lot of numbers in my diary, my phone log. But my biggest thing was if I had ever walked in on something like that, I was so afraid that I would shoot the guy that was doing it or shoot whoever was doing it. That was my biggest fear. But other than that, I had a good time.
I'm glad you're so honest. Seriously, it's refreshing because that's a tough situation. At the time, like, did you appreciate that you were given those titles and being able to be the advocate for those women?
No, I didn't appreciate it at the time. In fact, when I left Fort Devens and went down to Florida, I stayed with an aunt who had a teenage daughter. And at that point, I was ready to kill or run over any teenager I saw.
Well, yeah.
It was enough. I'd had enough.
That's a lot of trauma that you absorb from other people.
Sherry, my niece or my cousin, she was a trip. She was so much fun and just always bubbly and everything. She helped me to get over all of that. I wasn't going to run over the kids anymore.
May I ask what she suggested to help relieve that stress?
She was just so into everything. You know, she was such a cute kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And just we teased each other like crazy. She still brings up the fact that I bought her some Fonzie socks for her birthday.
I mean, he was cool back then.
Yeah, back then he was cool. She was gone. She was there. So,
okay. So, what made you decide to get out of the Army in 1978?
Well, actually, nobody asked me to reenlist.
Oh,
so I just said, "Yeah, my time was up."
And I have to ask: back then, did they help transition you out of the military to the civilian world? No.
Good luck. See ya.
That was it. Where did you end up going then?
Down to Florida.
Was that Florida? You stayed in Florida then?
Yeah, I went down to Florida. Well, my mom had asked me to see one of her sisters out, and she lived in Florida. So I drove down. I said, I wasn't ready to go back to California yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So I drove down to Florida in my little rabbit. I bought a rabbit. Now, Fort Devens, I bought the rabbit, and one day it wouldn't start. So I was walking up to the bay. I walked into work, and one of my first sergeants, he says, I was full of snow. He says, where the hell you been? I said, well, my rabbit died. He goes, looked at me, he goes, I didn't think you were that kind of girl. I go, no, my rabbit, my car.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, you end up in Florida, and then you end up deciding that you want to go back into the military. You go into the Navy in 81.
Yeah.
First of all, what was it like between that time, between 78 and 81 in the civilian world?
I was working at the Navy Exchange at Jacksonville. They had a huge base there, huge Navy base.
Oh, okay.
And I was working there. They switched me out to Corey Station. So I finished up there. But one day somebody parked behind the van I was driving for the exchange, and it was pouring down rain, and I didn't look behind me. And he had there was no cameras back then. I didn't look behind me, and I crunched a guy's car a little bit. So I called the master at arms. I told the police, the local Corey Station's people, not Corey Station, but yeah, maybe it was Corey. But anyway, the kid that they sent out didn't know how to write the ticket up, so I did.
You're like, I got this. I've been in the military. Military police right here.
So when he took it in, there's their master at arms sergeant or chief called me in. He says, what the hell are you doing with this? How do you manage this? I told him all about the MP thing. Okay. Then I started watching closely how people were being treated. And I liked it. I thought what I saw. And I thought, you know, I really haven't seen enough. Let me go join the Navy.
And they took you right in.
Yeah. But I had to start. Well, wait a minute. I had to go as an E3. I had to go in as an E3. So I lost a rank, a couple of ranks.
So you were what were you in the?
Acting E5.
Okay. So yeah. So you're back at E3. Uh-huh. And what did they bring you in as? Did you have to do basic training?
Yes.
What?
They called me in. They called me in about 2 weeks after I signed up because I had picked the job and I was waiting for the class to start. He said, I got some good news and some bad news. I said, okay, what is it? He says, well, you're going to have to go through boot camp again. And he says, but the good news is you can opt out because it wasn't in your contract. And I kind of went, okay, what the hell? Why not?
Oh, you wanted to go through the gas chamber again?
I knew the game. you know? I had a good time there.
Well, where was basic? Was it in Florida?
Orlando.
Okay.
We went to Disney World. I had some friends in Jacksonville. I had a friend that I worked with in Jacksonville. When I was going to graduate, I called my mom in California. And, of course, first words out of her mouth was, are you drunk? I said, Mom, I got a ticket and a way to get you here to see my graduation. Are you drunk? No, I haven't been able to drink yet. She came out with, my friend brought her up. And so we had a good time. That's 3 or 4 days. Yeah. She said on the way back that my friend said on the way back, your mom all of a sudden just hollered, stop the car. And she ran to the beach and she says, now I've had my feet in the Atlantic and the Pacific. So she was a happy camper.
You made your mom's year. Okay. So how different was Army basic training to Navy basic training?
Well, like I said, I do not remember Army basic training that much at all. The only thing I remember about them is running. I mean, the minute you got off the bus, you were running everywhere.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. But at 25, yeah.
Did they do the shakedown?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, you take your duffel bag and they shake everything down to make sure that you didn't bring anything that you weren't supposed to.
Oh, well, that's just, your suitcase. Yeah.
Yeah.
They would do that. They did that. Yeah. So the Navy.
Okay.
Yeah, the Navy did that too. But as far as I was concerned, the Army, the only thing I remember is just the running. I was very impressed with the young ladies that were the CTs, the drill sergeants. They took these 80 women and they made them one unit. It was amazing to watch. It was amazing to watch because, you know, the Army is an army of one. The Navy is a team effort. The Navy, you can't call the fire department when you're on a ship. You can't call the fire department. You got to learn that stuff. And you got to learn how to keep things right where they were. I mean, whether you had small lockers and small spaces, and you had to do that. I mean, you didn't have a choice. And I watched him mold these women, these 80 women, individuals, into one. It was amazing. It was amazing to me. I'm glad I did it because I really understood what it was all about. Yeah.
Okay. So, Pat, what was your job title in the Navy?
Cryptologic technician until I transferred out.
Okay. And that you have like security clearance for that?
Oh, yeah. High security clearances.
Okay. So you worked in an area where you were talking about one door in. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, you basically walked into a safe. You know, you walked into a room with no windows, one door in, one door out, and nobody else could come in unless they knew the combo.
Oh.
That simple. It was that simple.
How many people were allowed in there at a time?
Well, each squad, we had quite a few, actually.
And then how many hours a day did you have to go in that room?
Well, we went in for 8 hours at a shift, but we did what they call a 2-2-2-80. We worked 2 days. Two mids, two swings, and this was 8 hours, 16 off, 8 hours, eight off, 16, you know, that kind of thing. And then 80 hours for free time. That was ours. So it was a 2-2-2-80 setup. Days, mids, and swings.
Was that tough on your body, or did you just, this was something
you got used to it. You figured out how to sleep when they need 8 hours before your next shift, you know, that kind of stuff. You got used to it. You did it.
Okay. You know, these days they have all that research that leads to a early mortality. So I'm glad you're still here.
I just turned 78. So yeah,
that's true. How many years did you do that for?
I did that for about 5 or 6 and I wanted out. I needed to go outside and I couldn't, I'm not an indoor person. I was never an indoor person.
Yeah.
So when I got to Scotland, I switched out to their master at arms, which is the military police for Navy. Now, thinking I was going to go on ships, they sent me to dog handler school because that's the only thing the Navy hadn't or the Army hadn't sent me to was a dog handler. So here I am at 30-something years old being a dog handler. I had a blast. I had a blast.
I was going to say, did you enjoy that?
I did.
So you're outside now.
Outside. You're not... a dog by my side.
Yes.
A nice puppy.
What kind did they use back then?
Oh, God, everything from German Shepherds down to, well, they had a Cairns Terrier. They had Beagles and Cairns Terriers because they were small. They could get into these small places in the ships.
Oh, okay. Talk to me about this. So you got to be the dog handler and how long you build a connection with this dog.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And then do they just get sent out to do their mission and you get another?
Yeah, well, I lucked out. I lucked out because this dog worked so good for me and made me look so good.
Do you remember his name?
His bear.
Bear.
It was Bear. His bear dog. Yeah. Anyway, he really did. He made me, oh man, he made me look like a genius. I swear to God, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Pat, I think you are a genius. I think, yeah, I think you need to give yourself some credit. You are a genius. Listen to your history.
Well, hey, you know, he was the best partner I ever had. We didn't argue about the music. We didn't argue about who was driving. Nothing of that. None of that. We didn't where we were going, anything. The worst part about it, I think the worst, was at Christmas time when they did that jingle bell with the dogs barking. I had the radio on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that song came on and he went nuts. He was trying to find out where the dogs were in the car.
Oh, I'm so glad you had such good memories with him.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. And I got to transfer with him. They sent me, I picked him up in Naples. They transferred me to, when I asked to get out, I mean, to transfer. I went to Alameda and they said, this team, we don't want to break this team up. They're really, really good. So they let me transfer. As a matter of fact, when I pulled into Philly, because we did airplanes too, when they would pull into Naples, I'd do the airplanes and I trained with the air. They let me train with them. I mean, they let me put stuff in their things and train, use it as a training aid. But anyway, when I got to Philly, I'm sitting at the Philly air station waiting for the kids from Philly to come pick us up. Because Bear was going to stay there for a while, because I was going on to MA school. I had to go to another school. But anyway, as I'm waiting in the thing, here comes the Hawaiian air crew. They just landed, and the first words out of their mouth when they saw me was, "Where's Bear Dog? Where's Bear Dog?" He's right there. He's over there. Go see him.
You all really were known as a team.
Yeah.
Oh, so how did that make you feel when you had to go to another school and leave him?
It upset me, but they sent him on to where I was going to be stationed, and they took care of him.
Oh.
I talked to him. They sent him on to Alameda from Philly. I talked to him so they knew what to expect from him and how good he was. Yeah, so they took care of him. They took care of him. But then when I saw him, it was like, great.
So you were reunited with him again. Oh, my gosh. Oh, Bear. And then did he end up staying with you till the end of his life?
He was going to, I was getting ready to take him home, actually. They were going to release him to me because it was time to retire him.
Okay.
But I had gone on leave for a week and he died in that time frame that I was gone.
Oh, Pat, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it broke my heart. But, you know.
I bet.
We had a good time.
Do you have pictures of you and Bear?
I don't have any of Bear. No, what I did do for Bear, one of the ships that I had to do in Naples. The idiot on the quarterdeck is second class, I tell you. So we're out on the ship. They take me out in this little boat, take me to the ship, and it's one of those ones with a ladder on the side that's bouncing off the side of it every time the wave hit it.
Yeah.
So I had to carry Bear up. And he was 75 pounds, a dog. I had to carry him up this little ladder to the quarterdeck. And I saluted him, did whatever they were supposed to do. And I said, permission to come aboard. And he goes, show me your ID. So I pulled out my ID card, showed him what it was. He said, now show me the ID for the dog. I said, I don't have an ID for the dog. He said, show me. I said, well, here's his tattoo. It's in his ear. I'm not letting the dog on ship without, this is an E5, tell an A6 this. Now, I said, okay. So I hollered down to the boat, don't leave. We went back down the ladder. By the time I got to the station, my chief was on the phone. He goes, what happened? I said, well, the second class wouldn't let Bear Dog across the quarterdeck. Okay, enough said. But at that point, I took Bear Dog down to the pass an ID office, got him an ID card.
Yeah.
So, with his picture on it, by God.
Oh, my God. Oh, do you still have that?
No, no. It's been years.
I would love to put that on the podcast art that is on our podcast, because I'm sure everybody wants to know what Bear looks like now. But
he was a border collie lab mix. So he had three white feet. He was strictly drugs. He was so gentle that I would take him to the schools and the kids were able to pet him. And that's how gentle he was. And he loved it. And one little boy says, you forgot his sock. I go, well, no, I didn't. And then it dawned on me that he only had three socks on. He was like, I didn't pay attention. I never paid any attention to that part. But it was fun. You know, that was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed myself in the military, quite frankly.
I could tell.
All the bullshit that I didn't fall for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I didn't fall for the crap that the guys were pushing out.
And Pat, I want to thank you too, because you have such a strong spirit. And you're the type of woman, I could just tell by talking to you, that makes like, okay, like this situation isn't the most ideal, but you are going to make the best of it. And I just want to thank you for helping all those military women that had their rights taken away from them. And thank goodness you were there to be their advocate, because you have such strength and resilience. And I am sure that each and every one of them were so happy that you were part of their journey in that.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
And I want to thank you so much for taking time to share your story and being on Dog Tag Diaries. And Pat, you said you didn't have a story. You have a story. And I want every other woman out there to know that they have a story as well. And it's so important to come and share it, because I know that the audience is going to love hearing yours.
Okay. Well, thank you.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Dog Tag Diaries, Season 6, baby! We're gunning for 5,000 downloads and 26 Apple reviews, and I know we can get there with your help. Share these episodes, leave a review, and let's show the world how powerful military women warrior voices really are.